Now, consideration may move from promisee or any other person. A, an old lady by a deed of gift made over some property to her daughter R with a direction that R should pay an annuity to A's brother C. So what is the consideration which is passing? The annuity. On the same day, R executed a writing in favor of C, agreeing to pay the annuity. Afterwards, she declines to fulfill her promise, saying that no consideration had moved from C. So, hence C, though a stranger to the consideration, was entitled to maintain the suit. Now, please remember, this is the most important part. You should have privity to contract. A stranger to a contract cannot sue. But when such kind of considerations move from someone else and not the promisee, in that case, even a stranger to the party, the agreement can go ahead and sue. I am making a trust deed for a minor. The contract is by me, but the consideration must pass to someone else. The minor can sue the trust holders if the trust amount is not going to the minor for her benefit. The beneficiary is not getting anything. The beneficiary can sue even if the beneficiary is not part of the contract. Past consideration. A found B purse and gave it to him. B promised to give rupees 100 as a reward. Now here the B's promise, the act of A of finding a purse is past consideration. In the past I have already done something, and in consideration right now I am paying you something. Present consideration, everything is happening in presence right now. A receives rupees 20 in cash from B in return of article which he promises to deliver to B. So this is present. It is present consideration for promise of delivery of an article. Future consideration, as I said, in future the consideration passes. A promises to sell and deliver a bag of rice for 50 kg to B at rupees 1000 after a week, upon B's promise to pay amount to A at the time of delivery. So everything is happening in the future, the delivery, the payment, etc. But it is right now that we are entering into. The present consideration is where it is executed contract. This is a form of executory contract. In case of future consideration, it is outstanding on both the sides. Okay, in present consideration, it is outstanding only on one side. Now, consideration need not be adequate to the promise. Now, a consideration means what? It means something which is given in return of the promise. I am promising to give my vehicle. In return, what are you giving me? 5 lakh of rupees. So that becomes a consideration. Now it may so happen, it is not to the value of it. I don't use it anymore. Though the value then was 25 lakh, but now I am giving it to you for 15 lakh. That was not the value then. But even then, I can go ahead give it for a lesser consideration. Okay? It is not mentioned anywhere that the consideration which passes has to be exactly to that valuation. For example, I am selling the property. When I bought it, it was 80 lakh. Today it is for 100 lakh. But I am selling it just for 90 lakh. Perfectly fine. But the stamp duty payable, if by ready reckoner is 100, I will have to pay stamp duty on the basis of that ready reckoner rate only. Consideration must be real and not illusory. Okay, it should be something which is real. It should be in existence. Like for example, if A promises to life in the dead body of B's son for rupees 100, the agreement is void because of the physical impossibility of the performance. So it should be, one should be able to perform. It should be a competent, real, and it should have a value in the eyes of law. The consideration must be lawful. Okay. For example, the way I said, my consideration is giving of OPM in return of my property. It's an unlawful consideration. Or where people, you know, give false promises to buy jobs for you. You give me 10,000 rupees, I will get you a government job. This is unlawful. You cannot enforce such kind of agreements. These are unlawful consideration. Now, discharging pre-existing obligation is no consideration. In the past, there was an existing obligation and you are paying it off. It's not a consideration. A promise to pay money to police officer to investigate into a crime. The agreement was held to be invalid. Why? Because it's a pre-existing obligation of the police to go ahead and inquire the crime. It is his obligation already. I need not go ahead and pay. So, the police can't go ahead and file a suit in the court of law saying that he promised me to pay 10 lakh rupees if I inquire this. No, that was your job. That was your duty. It was a pre-existing obligation. So, you have to do it. Now, a consideration may be an act also. It can be abstinence or a promise. For example, A requests B to sell and deliver certain goods on credit. B agrees to do so provided C guarantees the payment of the price. Okay. So, here the sale of goods by B to A is consideration for C's promise for guarantee of the payment. There is a guarantee given. So, this is a positive act. Let us take another example. A lender. Okay. A, the lender, entered into an agreement with B, the borrower. I am lending and you are borrowing from me. B, you have failed to pay that loan which you have borrowed. So, in turn, what B promises? You will promise to raise the rate of interest from 10 to 12% in consideration. You will say that, okay, go ahead. I have not been able to pay, increase the consideration. Or I promise to pay you 15 lakh, you enter into an agreement of confirmation, saying a deed of confirmation that I confirm I had taken a loan of this amount and I have to pay this amount. So, that is also permissible. A agrees to sell his house to B for rupees 10 lakh. Here's B's promise to pay sum of 10 lakh is the consideration for A's promise to sell the house. And A's promise to sell house is the consideration for B's promise to pay 10 lakhs. So, my promise to you to give my property to you is my consideration passing to you. Your promise to pay me 10 lakh is your consideration passing to me. Now, we have spoken what is a contract, what is offer, proposal, acceptance, what is consideration. Now, let us come to another important aspect of a contract, and that is capacity of the parties. If you remember, I had said that if the person is not in capacity to enter into a contract, then that contract is void or voidable. What is capacity of a party? Contract Act states that if I am a minor, if I am a person of unsound mind, it can be under influence of liquor also. I can be a drunkard, I can be an idiot, I can be an old person. Do I have the capacity to enter? If yes, then I can enter into a contract. But if the answer to the question is no, then it debars me from entering into a contract and the contract becomes void or voidable depending on the nature of the contract. Now, let us see what is the capacity of the parties. Capacity of the parties is person who is competent to enter into a contract. Various people can enter into a contract. So, let us understand who cannot enter into a contract. Minor cannot enter into a contract, but there are exceptions to the same. Person of unsound mind. Now, who is person of unsound mind? An idiot who does not understand anything. An insane person who is lunatic, schizophrenic. A drunkard, old person. Now, please remember, there are certain exceptions here also. For example, the lunatic person, he has episodes of lunacy. And there are episodes when he is of sound mind. He is understanding what he is doing. Okay? If you have entered agreement at that particular time when he is of sound mind, then it is perfect. But then again, you need to prove that. Disqualified by other law. Convicts cannot enter into a contract. Alien enemies cannot enter into a contract. Insolvents, married women, professionals. There are exceptions, but there are, like in England, barristers cannot sue their clients. In India, High Court, we can enter into a contract and sue for recovery of money. Foreign sovereigns, ambassadors, corporations. But there are exceptions to this. Like every rule has an exception, there are exceptions to these parts also. There are exceptions various aspects which are related to minors, which we'll do in detail in the next slides. Void ab initio, it can be void ab initio, it can be voidable also. If it is for necessity, the contract is for necessity, it's perfectly fine. Then once he attains majority, he can resign from it or accept it. A minor cannot be a partner, he cannot be insolvent, he cannot be a surety, he cannot be an agent, parents are not liable, and a contract for training and development, he is liable for tort. So these are some laws relating to minors. Now let us in detail, that was just a snapshot of what is capacity to enter into a contract. Now, what contract says is, for a valid contract, the parties to contract must have capacity, that is competency, to enter into a contract. Okay. Section 10 of Contract Act requires that the person should be competent in order to enter into a valid contract. All agreements are contracts if they are made by free consent of the parties competent to contract. There should be a free consent as well as competency. Okay. There are some persons who, because of their age, the condition, the status, cannot enter into a contract. Like for example, you saw married women. It is not that married women cannot enter into a contract. They can enter into a contract which requires for them, which is with regards to their property, which makes them, you know, create the fulfillment of their necessities. Like for example, selling of husband's property for necessaries, but in consent, etc. So, I can't sell my husband's property. I cannot, just because I am his wife. Okay? But if it's for necessary, I can bind. But then those are different kind of obligations. But in contract, I can't sell my husband's property. That's why a married woman has been included there. Now, the term of capacity to a contract is defined under Section 11 of the Contract Act. What it says, every person, okay, is competent to contract who is in the age of majority according to the law of which he is subject, and who is of sound mind and is not disqualified from contracting by any law to which he is a subject. Now, who is a minor? There are two categories of minor. One is the age of 18 and one is the age of 21. Basically, in eyes of law, a minor is a person who has not completed the age of 18. However, for certain reasons, the age shifts to 21. When, in case of minor, where guardians are appointed or superintendents of the court is put, then in that case, it is 21. Now, minor is considered as an infant, that he cannot think on his own. He cannot act on his own. He needs guidance. Okay. So, under the principle of infancy, he gets protection of the court of law against any kind of exploitation. I enter on behalf of the minor. and he has certain obligations, he will not be bound by that. But if that agreement is creating some benefit for me, I will be entertained, like I am the minor and the agreement is for my benefit, well and good. But if it's creating some obligation on me, no, that cannot be enforced upon me. Okay, it gives, now the Indian Contract Act gives a special privilege and position to the minor because of the age factor. A contract is void or voidable at the behest of the minor. He is allowed to take advantages but not the obligations. Now, what are the rules which protect the minor under Indian Contract Act? An agreement with minor is void ab initio, the spring itself, the beginning itself, the birth of the contract itself is void at the beginning, ab initio. It is void right from the beginning. Minor can be a beneficiary or promisee. If he is a beneficiary, then it can be enforced by him. But if there is an obligation in caste, it can't be enforced. When an agreement is made by a minor, it is void. The minor cannot ratify the agreement even on attaining majority because a void agreement cannot be ratified. But to the contrary, if it is for his benefit, he can ratify it. A minor sold a shop to B. The consideration was paid to A, but the sale deed could not be registered because A was a minor. B filed a suit against A to recover the consideration paid by him. It was held that the agreement is void and A needs to pay back the consideration, no restitution. So the minor will pay back, but if it's creating some other obligation that he has to do it, then it, like for example, he was not under obligation to give away the property. He gave the money that he earned because the principle of unjust enrichment comes into picture. So if I have gained something, I will return that, but no obligation can be created. A minor can always plead minority against a minor. A minor borrowed 1,000 rupees on a fraudulent representation saying that he is a major. Here the creditor cannot sue to get his money back. It is for the creditor to be aware that the person with whom he is entering the contract is a major. He can only lend the money to a major. Minor is liable for necessaries supplied or necessary services rendered to him or his minor dependents. A minor need not hold any specific performance except in certain cases. There are certain cases where a specific performance will not be held against a minor. Very important that a minor cannot be made a partner. He cannot be adjudged as an insolvent and he cannot be made a surety or a guarantor to an agreement, a loan agreement. In case there is a joint contract by a minor and an adult, all the liability will be on the adult and not on the minor. In the same way, as we had seen that a minor cannot be a guarantor or a surety, he cannot also be a shareholder. There has to be some guardian. Like for example, you are making someone nominee, a minor a nominee. You will also have to mention some guardian for that minor. Minor cannot be appointed as an agent, but he will not, he can be appointed as an agent, but he will not be held liable for any act done thereunder. So you have to be very careful when you are entering into an agreement with a person who is minor. No liability can be imposed on parents even if the contracts are for necessaries. The parents of minor may pay money borrowed by him just out of moral obligation. For example, where I am a minor and I have borrowed 1 lakh rupees. Now the borrower, I am the borrower, the lender cannot sue me, but that does not mean that my parents would be made liable. No, out of moral obligation, if they want to pay it, they will pay, but the lender cannot recover it from my parents. Parents can be held liable when they are acting as an agent for the parents. So, if the minor is acting as an agent for the parent, then the parent can be made liable on the principle of the principal-agent relationship. Otherwise, the parents cannot be held liable. Okay? Again, minor entering into contract for apprenticeship is valid for internship, but only because it is beneficial. Please understand, for anything and everything for minor will be valid only when it gives a certain benefit to the minor. A minor but would be liable for any civil wrong, that is tort. If he is in breach of a tort, he will be liable for that. Okay, even if it is a breach of, it shows that there is a breach of agreement. Now, if a minor in the course of doing as per the act is found guilty of negligence, he can be made liable for tort. Negligence is a civil wrong, it is tort. So, he will be liable under that. But under contract for anything else, no. A minor hired for horse riding, a horse for riding under express instructions not to jump on it. He rented the horse to one of his friends who jumped on it for a long distance, whereby the horse died. Now here the minor will be liable for tort because there was a trespass and it was not within the object and purpose of hiring. There was clear instruction which was not followed, so he is liable for tort. Now the contract of minor can be valid, voidable and void. By now we understand what is voidable and void. Void is something which cannot be just executed, and voidable is at the option of the aggrieved party. When is it valid? Contracts for necessities, which includes all goods and services, is a valid contract with minor. Contract for loan taken for purchase of articles of necessities are valid contract. When is it voidable? In case of promissory pay under Negotiable Instrument Act, which leads to option, it becomes voidable. And all contracts except for valid and voidable contracts becomes void. You cannot enter it with the minor. Now, from Section 11 of the Act, we can draw the following conclusion, that the following persons are not capable to enter into a contract. The person who is a minor, persons of unsound mind, idiot, lunatic, drunkard, old person, persons who are disqualified, for example, insolvent. I have been adjudged insolvent, I cannot enter into an agreement. I am an alien enemy, I cannot enter into an contract with you. I am a professional. Now, like the example that I gave you of advocates in England, no matter what, the barrister cannot sue his client for recovery of money. But in India, under the Bar Council of India's rules, regulations, we can enter into a contract with the company, and when they do not pay, we can sue for recovery of money. A married woman who is otherwise competent to enter into a contract cannot enter into a contract of in respect of her husband's property unless it has devolved upon her or given to her by way of gift. Okay, she can bind, however, the property for her necessaries. For example, put it on rent and take the rent or seek maintenance on from the earnings of that property. Now, let us come to the further aspect, which is a free consent. We have done offer, proposal, acceptance, capacity of party. Now, free consent. What is a free consent? Saying yes without any obligation, without any pressure, without any influence. Being aware that I am saying yes or I am giving my assent for a particular thing. Free consent comes from the principle of consensus ad idem, which means meeting of the mind at the same time for the same thing, for the same aspects. Now, which are the elements which remove the consent, free consent term, which dilutes the free consent? Coercion, undue influence, fraud, misrepresentation and mistake. Agreement which are voidable are coercion, undue influence and fraud. Okay, And misrepresentation is also voidable. Mistake, it depends on what kind of nature it the contract is. It can be void or voidable. How do we consolidate the free consent? A free consent is not a consent free when it is caused or affected by coercion, undue influence, fraud, misrepresentation or mistake. Now let us understand what is consent. When two or more persons are said to consent, when they agree upon the same thing in the same sense. This is defined under section 13 of the Contract Act. Consent means that the parties have identification of mind. We are on the same page. We are understanding each other. Okay. Section 14 says that the consent is said to be free only when it is not caused by coercion, undue influence, fraud, misrepresentation or mistake. Now what is coercion? Coercion means any act which is made to be done forcibly under force. That is coercion, to make it do under force. Undue influence, using your authority for unfair use. Fraud means to deceive or cheat. Misrepresentation is false representation innocently, not willingly. Otherwise, if it's intentionally, then it comes under fraud. If it's unintentional representation, misrepresentation is a false representation without intention. And what is mistake? An erroneous belief concerning something. When both parties are under a mistake as to a matter of fact, the agreement becomes void.